boys don't mean to bust your bubble, but girls of the world ain't nothing but trouble. So next time a girl gives you the play, just remember my rhymes and get the hell away. Just last week when I was walking down the street, I observed this lovely lady that I wanted to meet. I walked up to her, I said hello, she said, hey, you're kinda cute. I said, yes, I know, but by the way, sweetheart, what's your name? She said, my friends like to call me Exotic Elaine. I said, my name is the Prince. And she said, why? I said, well, I don't know, I'm just a hell of a guy. But enough about me, yo, let's talk about you and all the wonderful things that you and I can do. I pop some cash in a little bit of time. I showed some cash, then the girl was mine.
The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivy from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the March 2018 issue of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached at www.kiwanisfoundation.org. We're going to continue with March Madness Preview. 68 teams, 1,000 players, the NCAA tournament will be filled with freshmen, stars, and Cinderella stories. Which team will reign supreme? We're beginning here on page 31. Picture here of Oklahoma star Trae Young, freshman, point guard. The shout-outs rolled in one by one for Oklahoma guard Trae Young. LeBron James posted a picture of the two of them on Instagram. Steph Curry called him unbelievable and said Young's magnetism is special. Russell Westbrook described his play as amazing. Dwayne Wade tweeted, "If you haven't tuned in, you're better." There's a good reason why NBA royalty is showering praise on this 6'2", 180-pound freshman. Young scored 43 points in his fifth game, a win over Oregon. Against third-ranked Wichita State, a couple weeks later, he scored 29 points and added 10 assists. The next game, against Northwestern State, he tied an NCAA record with 22 assists. In an overtime victory over TCU, he scored 43 points, 29 after halftime, and hit 10 threes. He scored fewer than 20 points only once, and that was when he had his 15 in his debut. He's on a record-setting run. Only one freshman has ever led the nation in scoring, Jason Cowley, VMI, 2001-2002, and only two freshmen has led the country in assists, T.J. Ford, Texas, 01-02, and Lonzo Ball, UCLA, 2016-2017. Through January 22nd, Young had 30.5 points and 9.7 assists, putting him on pace to do both. I mean, I guess people expect me to play like Steph now every night, he says, referring to the Warrior superstar. But I just play my game. Who want to be compared to a guy like Steph Curry? Young is not the only first-year player making waves. All over the country, freshmen are dominating college basketball, carrying on a trend that began in 2006 with the implementation of the so-called one-and-done rule, which keeps players from entering the NBA until a year after their high school class has graduated. While college programs have benefited from the policy, loading up on talent, would-be NBA rookies and superstar freshmen doesn't guarantee a title. Got next. Young's slight frame and high-volume scoring have led some to compare him with Curry, who averaged 21 points as a freshman at Davidson. Ease right in. Marvin Bagley III was 14 when he became famous. 3 days after he finished 7th grade, Arizona State offered him a scholarship, as did Creighton and the University of San Francisco. So it's no surprise that Bagley, who ultimately signed with Duke, is one of the top candidates for Player of the Year. He's averaging 22.5 points and 11.5 rebounds for the powerhouse Blue Devils and is a prime candidate to be the number one pick in this year's draft. The list of fellow freshmen making huge impact is long. DeAndre Ayton, a 7'1" forward, is averaging 19.7 points and 11.1 rebounds at Arizona. Colin Sexton is leading Alabama with 19.3 points per game. Muhammad Bamba at Texas is second in the nation in blocks. Colorado's McKinley Wright led the Buffaloes to win their first, had their first win over a top five opponent, Arizona State, since 2003. And that's not including Missouri's Michael Porter Jr., whom some expected to be the best in the class. He injured his back in his first game and had season-ending surgery. You would think that these freshmen, who not only have to acclimate to college life, but also have to adjust to playing on national TV in packed arenas, would take a few months to figure out how to play at the next level. But that's not what happens. They all have competed against each other at the highest level before they even get to college, says ESPN analyst Fran Fraschilla, a former Division I coach. The fear factor of going into college has been lessened by the fact that these guys come in with great confidence. These guys have had success not only against future college players, but also guys that played in college last year and are now in the NBA. The summer circuit, tournaments, and leagues hosted by organizations such as USA Basketball, AAU, and Nike is one reason why Kevin Knox has been able to thrive at Kentucky. The Wildcats start five freshmen and play eight. Even their coach, John Calipari, who is famous for recruiting freshmen, knows the risk. A team this young usually goes 7-30, and they fire the coach, he told reporters in December. But Knox, who was averaging 14.3 points, knew his teammates before he arrived in Lexington. We were friends before we got here, the 6'9" forward says. We played against each other, with each other. We were already gelled, laughing, making fun, having fun. There are few unfamiliar opponents for this crop of freshmen. I played against Marvin Bagley, says Jaron Jackson Jr., a 6'11" freshman averaging 11.9 points and 3.4 blocks for Michigan State. I've known them forever. Even though we've been around each other, we're competing. That doesn't change in college. While even top players need time to adjust to the speed of the college game, they usually adapt within a few practices, says O'Shea Brissett, who became the first freshman since Carmelo Anthony to score 25 points and grab 14 rebounds at Syracuse. Basketball is basketball, wherever you play, and going talent or experience. High-flying freshmen bring a lot to a program, but do they bring wins? Looking back on the last 10 champions, the answer is mixed. North Carolina, the 2017 champ, was led by senior Kennedy Meeks and juniors Joel Berry and Justin Jackson. Villanova, which won in 2016, was guided by seniors Ryan Arcidiacono and Daniel Ochefu. Even champions that relied on freshmen like Duke in 2015 and Kentucky in 2012 still had a handful of veterans. I would take the veteran team over the team with all the elite freshmen, says Fraschilla. The teams that suffer the heartbreaking loss, those veteran teams that return most of the lineup for the next season, I think they have an inherent motivation to continue to advance or wipe away the disappointing losses of the previous year. The teams that have a healthy dose of veterans, they have the advantage over teams that have the really talented freshmen who are just passing through college basketball. Many of the top programs this season have a mix of freshmen and veterans. Villanova relies on Jalen Brunson, a junior guard who is a Player of the Year candidate, and also Omari Spellman, a freshman averaging 10.2 points. Texas Tech's leading scorer is senior Keenan Evans, but freshmen Zaire Smith and Jared Culver play major roles. Even Duke, which starts four freshmen, relies heavily on senior All-America candidate Grayson Allen. Michigan State has sophomore Miles Bridges, one of the best players in the nation, along with Jackson. You have all areas of experience, Jackson says of his team. You have guys who have been to Final Fours. You have sophomores who win my position last year. We have a good mix. That experience will give Michigan State an edge in the tournament. The Spartans have Jackson, plus a combination of veterans such as Bridges and Lou Rawls Naren Jr. This March will likely see great performances from Young and Bagley, from Ayton and Sexton. The freshmen will wow us in the tournament, but an experienced team will cut down the net. Players, he reminds me of, these freshmen are dominating college ball and have bright pro prospects, too. They remind us of players we know very well. Trae Young, plays like Steph Curry from Davidson. Undersized, ridiculous handles, vision and range without equal, Young and Curry captivated the country while in college. Marvin Bagley III plays like Tim Duncan of Wake Forest. Duncan was called the big fundamental for his smooth, technically sound play, something Bagley exhibits on every possession. Colin Sexton plays like Russell Westbrook, UCLA. Incredibly athletic and unstoppable when driving to the rim, both are high-scoring point guards. Jaren Jackson plays like Miles Turner of Texas. Both can rebound and block shots and have enough offensive touch to be two-way threats. Kevin Knox plays like Kevin Durant of Texas. They are lean, tall forwards who handle the ball and knock down outside shots like guards. 5-Minute Guide. Before the tourney begins, have a little fun and pick up a few tips on finalizing your bracket. Mascot matchup. We've created a monster, or at least a monstrous mascot. Can you identify which college's mascot these body parts and accessories belong to? Let's go with the horns. Duke. Helmet. Purdue. The head. Xavier. The scarf. Oregon. The torso. Syracuse. The left arm. Virginia. The right arm. Villanova. The skirt. Michigan State. The tail, Florida. Left leg, West Virginia. Right leg, Louisville. Here's how to pick a Cinderella team. Unsure about which underdog to choose for your bracket? Follow these 4 easy steps to pick a team that will shock everyone. Number 1, stick with the seniors. Experience counts in March. The most famous Cinderella team in history, the 2006 George Mason Patriots, were a number 11 seed that made it to the Final Four. 3 of the starters were seniors, including Jai Lewis, 55, who scored 20 points at an Elite Eight upset of the UConn team, whose entire starting lineup was selected in the NBA draft. Number 2, man the point. Point guards are the show, so having a reliable one is vital. Shelvin Mack helped Butler reach back-to-back championship games in 2010 and 2011. Number 3, coaching choices. Who runs the bench? That can clarify things. Many Cinderellas have coaches with boyish looks. Brad Stevens, on the right, was 33 when Butler made its first Final Four. VCU's Shaka Smart was 34 in 2011, and Dayton's Archie Miller was 36 in 2014. All led their teams on deep runs and are at bigger jobs now. Dancing at random. No matter how many numbers you crunch or how many variables you consider, sometimes the Cinderella team comes out of nowhere. Feeling stumped? Close your eyes and just pick a team. 3 to watch. The women's tournament will be filled with star power. Be on the lookout for this talented trio. Kelsey Mitchell, Ohio State. Mitchell, a senior guard, credits an internship for her big reason. She worked in event management at Ohio State, helping with setup before football and men's basketball games. When she realized that she could balance school, basketball, and work, her mindset changed. "I'm more mature and it shows," she says. "I got out of my head and stopped being my worst critic." Her maturation has paid dividends. Michelle was averaging 24.8 points through January 22nd, second in the nation. Now the Player of the Year frontrunner is focusing on making her first trip to the Final Four. "We know that we can be good," she says. "It's about putting it into action." Sabrina Ionescu, Oregon. Calling Ionescu a triple-double machine is an understatement. The sophomore guard now holds the Division I record for most career triple-doubles, and she reached the milestone in just 48 games, 77 games faster than the previous record holder. Her explanation behind her quick success is simple. "I work really hard," she says. Ionescu, who is averaging a team-high 19.8 points along with 7.1 rebounds and 7.3 assists, helped the Ducks reach their highest ranking 7th in program history earlier this season. Oregon wants to at least make the Elite Eight this year, something the team did for the first time in 2017. Expect a few more triple-doubles along the way. Not that she's keeping count. As long as we're winning, nothing else matters, she says. Chenedi Carter, Texas A&M. Carter has things she wants to improve upon before the tournament, but good luck trying to find out what they are. I would never, ever give my opponents the secret to stop me, she says. Carter, a freshman guard, has made it very hard for any opponent to stop her this season. She scored 15 points in her college debut, 23 against a tough Oregon team, and set the program's single-game record with 46 points, including the game winner in a December victory over USC. I put a huge amount of work in over the summer, she says. I just have a lot of confidence in my game. Carter, who is averaging 20.7 points through January 22nd, tops among freshmen, is looking to take the Aggies past the second round for the first time since 2014. I play fearless, says the 19-year-old. I'm looking forward to the stage. Big players come through when the lights come on. Quiet Star, page 36 through 37. Hockey. There's a commotion surrounding the locker of Devils rookie Nico Hischier. A reporter has just approached, so winger Joseph Bratt starts to tease his teammate. Then a talkative equipment manager says he wants to tell his story. Through it all, Hischier sits quietly, just a pimply-faced teenager, taking in his surroundings. The Devils' surprise contenders, who had a 24-12-8 record through 44 games, are led by a group of youngsters. There's Bratt, 19, who is second on the team in points. Will Butcher, a 23-year-old defenseman who signed with New Jersey last summer after graduating from the University of Denver, is a power play wizard with more than half of his points coming on the man advantage. Taylor Hall, the 26-year-old top pick from 2010, is the team's points leader. And then there's Hischier, the 19-year-old first-time center living up to his number one pick status, but in his own quiet way. I love watching him play. It's a good thing kids change their minds often, because otherwise we might be watching Nico Hischier, the soccer player, and why not? It was his favorite sport growing up in Nader, Switzerland, and soccer was more popular there than hockey anyway. Plus, his dad, Reno, played pro soccer. But when Nico saw his friends playing on the ice in the winter, he decided to continue lacing up his skates. He doesn't have the same gaudy rookie numbers as other number one pick draft picks, but Nico, his share, is a big part of the New Jersey Devils' earlier-than-expected resurgence. Hischier burst onto the scene at the 2016 World Juniors, scoring twice in a near upset of the United States. After a successful season with the Halifax Mooseheads of the QMJHL in 2016-2017, Hischier became a candidate for the top pick in last summer's NHL draft. Upon hearing his name called by the Devils in Chicago, he became the first Swiss player to be a number one pick. New Jersey general manager Ray Shiro said that Hischier will make a difference. The hype was there, but Hischier was more concerned with making the squad. I just wanted to play each night, he says. I didn't have a lot of expectation. I just wanted to have team success. Then the season began. Most experts had the Devils, who haven't made the playoffs since 2012, continuing their rebuild. Instead, youngsters and veterans gelled quickly, starting 9-2. Through January 18, they were in second in the Metropolitan Division. It started in camp, says forward Drew Stafford, an off-season free agent pickup. It was our responsibility to right the ship. We surprised a few people, but we're not surprising people anymore. Hischier doesn't have the same flashy game as recent number one picks Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews, but he's still playing major minutes on a playoff contender. Through 44 games, he had 28 points and 20 assists, thanks to his pinpoint passing. It's hard to score in this league, Hischier says, but it's a really high compete level each night. I like that. It's really fun. Devils fans have taken to Hischier. Nearby Hobby's Deli even named a grilled chicken sandwich after him. He's also earned the praise of a hockey legend. Wayne Gretzky texts former Devils defenseman and current TV analyst Ken Danenko, "Hey, tell that number 13, I love watching him play. He's so enjoyable." When asked to recall his thoughts upon hearing about the text, Hischier is unsure. "What are you going to say?" asks Hischier. "It's awesome. No stain, no gain." Who suffered when two top offenses got together on Wild Card Weekend in January? The defenses, of course, and the equipment staff, two linebackers, the Rams' Alec Ogletree and the Falcons' Deion Jones aired their dirty laundry, pre- and post-game looks at their uniforms to gauge the toll on the NFL game tickets. Major League Baseball, lights, camera, play ball. Two-way Japanese star Shohei Ohtani has arrived in the United States at last. Major League Baseball fans are in for a treat. On a Friday in early December, 23-year-old Shohei Ohtani, often called the Babe Ruth of Japan because of his rare two-way prowess, announced he was signing with the Los Angeles Angels. "There was a wow factor to him," said Angels general manager Billy Epler of Ohtani, whom he had been scouting for 4 years. "He was a showstopper. It's not just that Ohtani pitches and hits, it's that he has a few peers at either discipline." The 2016 MVP in Nippon Professional Baseball, the world's best league outside Major League Baseball, Ohtani won NPB's 16 home run derby and threw the fastest pitch in league history, a 102.5-mile-an-hour heater, which broke his own record. "He's so talented," said his manager in Japan, Hideki Kuriyama. "It was really tough to use him the right way, with the right balance." As a starter for the Hokkaido Nippon Ham Fighters in 2016, his last full season, Ohtani finished with a 10-4 record in 20 starts and a 1.86 ERA, averaging more strikeouts per nine innings, 11.2, than Los Angeles Dodgers ace Clayton Kershaw. Ohtani relies primarily on his explosive fastball, supplemented with a slider and an occasional changeup or curve on the spot. Ohtani held his first press conference with the Angels, who hope the star can help them win a postseason game for the first time in 9 years. He also has an effective split-finger fastball, a pitch with which major leaguers aren't very familiar. As a designated hitter, he had an OPS of 1.004 with 22 home runs and 382 plate appearances, a better long ball rate than perennial Major League Baseball All-Stars Bryce Harper and Mike Trout. For the past five seasons, the Fighters have benefited from what players call Ohtani moments. The time he hit a home run on the first pitch of the game, then took the mound to throw 8 shutout innings, striking out 10. The time he skied a ball through the roof of the Tokyo Dome, ruled a double. The fourth game of the 2016 Japan Series, when he doubled twice before singling in the walk-off run in extra innings. "I've been seeing this up close," said Brandon Laird, a former Yankees infielder, now one of the four permitted foreigners on the Fighters. "Trust me, it's silly to us too. It's a see-it-with-your-own-eyes type thing. Proving ground." The Ohtani origin story begins in the sleepy city of Oshu, 300 miles north of Tokyo, where Shohei's father, Toru, played for a semi-pro team sponsored by the local Mitsubishi plant. After a shoulder injury at 25, he went to work full-time at the factory. When he wasn't at work, Toru would drill with Shohei in coach's summer games. He was happy to let his son hit and pitch. Toru's wife, Kayoko, a former top badminton player, didn't see the need for her son to specialize either. Shohei hardly performed at a level that presaged greatness, but he was singularly devoted to improving. He ate a dozen bowls of rice a day to put on bulk and detailed his baseball goals with a series of spreadsheets. Then, benefiting from a growth spurt in high school, he began throwing in the upper 90s and cranking moonshots. Soon, scouts from the majors began taking health steps to Japan and dotting the stands at his games. Otani says that the physical demands of both starting and batting cleanup have never been an issue, nor has he had a problem harnessing the focus required. At 18, Otani spoke openly about heading directly to a major league organization and skipping the Japanese draft. The Dodgers were reportedly closer to signing him as a pitcher, but there was plenty of competition. So much so that interest cooled among NYPD, BP, NPB teams, fearful they would waste a draft pick on a kid who would choose to play on the other side of the Pacific. The Nippon Ham Fighters may have a name that does not invite serious treatment. For the record, Nippon Ham sponsors the team. We're not talking about feisty pork products, but the organization, based in Sapporo and known for its shrewdness, adopted a novel strategy with Otani. They approached me. "What do you think about doing both?" he recalls. "I definitely wanted to try it. I still thought I had a chance to be a great hitter at a professional level." These players had a major impact on the majors. Hideo Nomo, the second Japanese player to ever jump to Major League Baseball and the first since 1964, Nomo was an All-Star and won National Rookie of the Year in 1995 with the Dodgers. His first three seasons were his best. Ichiro Suzuki, the international hit king, 3,080 in Major League Baseball, 1,278 in Japan, also won 10 straight gold gloves as an outfielder with Seattle from 2001 through 2010. In Miami since 2015, became a free agent after the 2017 season. Yu Darvish, though he had a rough 2017 World Series with L.A., Darvish was a four-time All-Star with the Rangers after arriving in 2012. He also became a free agent after the 2017 season. We've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached at www.kiwanisfoundation.org. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comment or questions, please call 919-832-5138.
Walking down the street, I observed this lovely lady that I wanted to meet.